Hello, everyone. Jim Coyle from Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Thank you so much for listening to our content. We hope you enjoy it. Make sure you're a subscriber at either your favorite podcast download or on our YouTube channel at Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Either way, just give us a like on any of those. We would greatly appreciate it. It helps us immensely. Thank you and have a great day. Hello, everyone. Jim Coyle from Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Thank you so much for listening to our content. We hope you enjoy it. Make sure you're a subscriber at either your favorite podcast download or on our YouTube channel at Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Either way, just give us a like on any of those. We would greatly appreciate it. It helps us immensely. Thank you and have a great day.
Welcome to Indiana Sports Beat Radio, brought to you by the Hard Truth Distilling Company in Brown County, Indiana.
So for the thousands in attendance and the millions watching around the world, it's time!
Three on the way. Oh, Elliott! Elliott! And Indiana wins the ball game!
Know your role and shut your mouth, you jabroni!
Throw game for the win! Taylor's gone! Goodbye, touchdown, Indy!
Pretty simple. I win. Google me.
You know that I'm the cream of the crop.
Oh. Now, from the Hard Truth Studios, here's Jim Coyle.
Glad to have you along on this Monday. I hope you had a great and wonderful weekend. Kicking things off with some championship talk. Our friend Greg Rakestraw from the ISC Sports Network, and who handled all of the duties for the IHSA Final Four, is with us to start things off. Greg, how was your weekend, man?
My weekend was fantastic. I hope yours was the same.
It was, and I got to take in some of the state finals, and man, they were all spectacular, and it's just kind of the way basketball has been this entire year, even with college. We've got the Final Four set there, all four number one seeds. That should be a spectacular Final Four. Indiana's was very spectacular as well.
Correct. So it was the closest that the four championship games had been since we went to the class format in 1998. The four games were combined by a combined 19 points. Obviously, the game that most are talking about will be the 4A championship, which I know is near and dear to your heart, with Jeffersonville claiming their first state title in 32 years and their first appearance in 30 years. And they have now ended three of the eight longest winning streaks in the history of Indiana high school basketball and two of the top five, as they hand Fishers their first loss in 44 games, winning the championship in overtime, 67-66 on Saturday night.
Yeah, and along with that, I had sent out a tweet right afterwards because I heard Sharon say it, but he said the third. He's actually just the second person to follow Don Carlisle as the person to win a state title as a player and a coach. That's pretty special.
It is, and so I will throw a couple of caveats out there, not trying to minimize Sharon's accomplishment in any way, shape, form, or fashion, because it's monumental. But yes, he and Don Carlisle have now done it each in the last 3 years. Pete Turgovich probably needs to be mentioned in that, just because it would have been the same school had it not been for consolidation. He played for East Chicago, Washington. Washington Roosevelt merged to form Central. He was the head coach with Etuan Moore and Angel Garcia. Kawan Short, that was on that team when East Chicago Central won it back in 2007. And the other thing that was pointed out to me on Twitter as well, and it's fair to point out too, Damon Bailey won as a player and coach at his alma mater. He was just coaching the girls basketball team when it happened, when he was at Bedford North Lawrence. But still, it is a remarkable accomplishment that Sharon has pulled off.
Yeah, and I agree that with Turgovich, then that he should be included. But that made Sharon right. He was correct. He was the third to do it. So, yeah, it is amazing. It's great to see. And if you look at all those people were great competitors, but it's just Sharon's his path is pretty cool to see to come full circle. But all of these teams, Orleans, man, you get a team like Orleans and win a state title. That's incredibly special. I heard a stat that now the sectional they play in, every team has won a state title. It's nuts.
Not every team, but four different teams have won a state title from that group. So what we would up here, it's the Hamilton County sectional that has been the toughest sectional, or it has been the one that is like the northeast side of Indianapolis sectional, where, you know, Cathedral and LN and Warren and North Central have all come out of that group and have won something in the last, you know, 10 to 15 to 20 years. Well, you would say that now about the sectional they are in. So Orleans had not won a sectional, I want to say, in 10 years, because they are in with Bar Reeve, Lagodi, and North Davies. And if I've got the year right on Lagodi, all of those would have won a state championship in 1A since 2012. And more years than not, the Southern representative in 1A comes from that group of teams. So Tom Bradley is a really good coach. He's won over 400 games. It's just they are in such a competitive group that once you get out of that sectional, you know you've got a good chance. And again, the teams that they beat to get to that point, the fact that they beat Hauser and were down 8 with 3 minutes left to play, and then beat Clay City, who was ranked number 1 in the state, and then beat Clinton Prairie, who was the top-ranked team in the northern half of the bracket, shows you just how difficult the path was and how impressive the job being done was by the Orleans Bulldogs.
And a just a great Final Four, period. The crowd was great. Boy, did it fill in for that 4A. But all day long, you had the 3A as well with that game going down to the wire. Desmond Briscoe trying to lead Addicts to a state championship, but it just wasn't to be on that day.
Correct. And South Bend St. Joe is really good. And in most years, they are the easy, clear, hands-down favorite in terms of 3A. The only reason that wasn't the case this year was because of the influx of teams from 4A and Addicts being a part of that. Again, South Bend St. Joe were the runners-up last year. Scottsburg played a phenomenal game to beat them in the championship game last year. But Addicts, East Chicago Central, and I referenced those two because they made the semifinals of 3A, but also Cathedral and New Pal, which is the team Addicts beat to get to the championship game, they would have all been, if not state contenders, you know, borderline top 10 teams, if not better, in terms of 4A. But 4A this year shrunk from the top 25% to the top 20%. So you have these handful of really good 4A teams that made their way to 3A, which made the field as competitive as it's ever been in 3A. And a real credit to Eric Gaff and South Bend St. Joe, because they won that game in the 50s. Remember, the week before, they scored 115 and 84 to win their two semi-state games. They realized they kind of had to play a completely different type of game to beat Christmas Addicts. They had to sag and really make it a half-court defensive game. And Addicts didn't want to play as fast as South Bend St. Joe, but South Bend St. Joe ultimately won this game because of their half-court defense, which really haven't said about them all year, but they knew this was the way they had to win, and they went out and got the job done. Great credit to that program. And by the way, Jim, that's the first boys basketball championship for the South Bend area since South Bend Clay won it back in 1994.
Yeah, and South Bend St. Joe's had a lot of well-known players. Even you got to go back to the 70s with John Laskowski, Tom Abernathy. But that was the first state title for South Bend St. Joe, who was in the Final Four we talked about last week with Lawrence North and that group there in 89. We were having that conversation. But, yeah, so South Bend St. Joe gets the first state title.
Correct. It is their 13th state championship over the course of 9 different sports, but it's the first time they have won one in boys basketball. They made it in the single class days in 93 as well. So again, when Jeffersonville was there, that was the team that Jeff beat in the morning game before they then beat Ben Davis in terms of the championship game. But yes, a great accomplishment for the Huskies.
And it was good to see some titles spread around to different places. Speaking of which, you can't get any further than Jeffersonville and South Bend St. Joe. I mean, the top two classes split from top to bottom, literally.
Well, this is the furthest away that the winners have been from Indianapolis since really 2007. It's the first time there has not been a state champ from Indianapolis or the contiguous counties since 2016. Now, in that year, LaPel won 2A, Liberty Christian won 1A. For those who don't know, Liberty Christian is in the heart of Anderson. And especially LaPel at the time played a largely Indianapolis schedule. So if you really want to go outside of the sphere of influence of Indianapolis, go back to 2007, when the team that was closest to Indianapolis that won a title would have been Northwestern, as in Kokomo. Oregon Davis won the 1A that year. 3A escapes me. That was not a Washington team. It was Plymouth that won 3A. And then it was East Chicago Central that won 4A. So it doesn't happen very often, but this is one of the years where there was no Marion County or surrounding seven counties that won a state championship. And again, that's probably good for everybody involved to share the wealth and spread it out a little bit.
A lot of coaches in attendance this year, which there are always coaches in attendance, but there were some high-profile coaches there. Of course, Chris Collins and his new assistant from Northwestern were there watching Trey Singleton, who from Jeffersonville, who is going to Northwestern. But you also had – I saw A.J. Moye, who is always there. Michael Lewis was there. And there, see, Nick – or Micah Shrewsbury, of course, his son Nick – almost did. I wouldn't want to say he won the game for South Bend St. Joe, but he had a large hand in towards the end of that win.
He had an awfully big three pointer late, and he and Elijah King each scored 16 points to pace South Bend St. Joe. And go ahead and mention, I'm not sure there's a player there that he's really going to recruit, but I thought it was the right thing that Darren DeVries was there just to be seen. And again, knowing that, you know, let's face it, the biggest of all criticisms, other than generally not winning enough, of his predecessor was not recruiting the state of Indiana. Well, Darren was there, and that was good to see. You saw a lot of coaches there because that last game was so senior-laden and had so many guys that had committed. So Northwestern was there to watch Trey, and Wright State was there to watch P.J. Douglas and Michael Cooper, and Miami of Ohio was there to watch Justin Kirby, and the smaller colleges were there to watch their guys on that Taylor team. The two highest-end recruits that played in the evening session are both sophomores, Jason Gardner Jr., and much like Micah Shrewsbury, you know, Dad was there to watch, who was on the Arizona staff, and you would think if Jason's going to be on the staff at UA that is where son would go. It's not a guarantee, but you would certainly think that's where he is going. The other guy that I'm curious to see how his recruiting developments is Elijah King, the sophomore for South Bend St. Joe. He finished with 16 points as well, you know, as Chase Kinesny, who is their all-time leading scorer, graduates. And he is probably a Mid-American Conference Missouri Valley Horizon League level recruit, is Chase Kinesny. King is going to be a pretty high-end recruit. You know, he's got the physicality to play major college basketball. He's 6'2". Can he be a point guard at that level? Because I think that's what he's going to have to be. And so, you know, does that skill set translate? But yes, it was, hey, I'm going to go make sure my face is shown to support the senior that has gotten here, or that's my kid out there playing, as was the case for Jason Carter and Micah Shrewsbury. And Jim, I thought it was really cool that Ryan Owens from Micah's staff was kind of in the recruit chair on the sideline. Micah was in the dad seat with the other parents. I thought that was really cool to see.
Yeah, he for the 4A game, he moved down to the coach's row is what I called it. But, yeah, not only that, though, for Indiana, there were a couple other people there. One guy was the only person wearing what I'd quote unquote colors, but they were black, but it had an IU on the back, and I took a picture. Everyone kept asking, who is that? I believe that was Nick Norton, who is an assistant coach at West Virginia, expected to be moving on to Indiana, but also another assistant named Drew Adams, currently at Cincinnati, but
right.
I don't want to make any predictions, but just saying.
You can. It's okay.
Another assistant coach that will probably be named on the Indiana staff soon as well. Now, and something to talk about with that is the fact that Flory Badunga, that sure. is now in the portal after going to Kansas via Kokomo. And I think that Drew Adams might have some knowledge about that particular
place. Yeah, there's just a little bit of a family tie there. For those who don't know, you know, kind of Flory's relationship with the Adams family. Sorry to make the play on words there for the television classic. But yes, very tied in there. And that's why, and I'm sure you have been preaching this, I hope, don't get freaked out that no one is on the IU roster.
Oh,
that's simply the way the game is played. You frankly, I'm not sure if you wanted many, if any guys back from last year's team. You wanted a clean start. And because it is so easy to flip a roster, especially when you can count on one hand, if not two, the programs that will have a bigger budget to pay players than Indiana University will, it's fair to report it. Don't freak out about it. Indiana's going to be just fine.
Oh, absolutely. I think that was 4 weeks between Dusty May's announcement and his first player that he brought on last year, just as an example. I mean, the portal is still, there's still names going into the portal.
Sure.
And there are thousands of names. So it's like, just relax, people. They're taught. As a matter of fact, there are two visits in Bloomington today. So it will just keep trickling out. It will start coming out, but it'll be a slow process over the next several weeks. And that's exactly what I've been telling people. Just chill, man.
And Jim, let me jump in here. Here's the thing. And I learned this from Paul Cassaro, obviously a much different level at IU Indy, but because of now, if your roster is bare and you're not working with the kids that are currently on campus, you know what that means? More time that you're out recruiting. More time that you can focus, because even once you get guys to commit, because, you know, we still actually require these guys to go to class and graduate and things like that. You know, those guys will be, you know, on their current campuses, finishing up classes until they then get in there this summer. So it is, again, in the latest element where this is becoming more and more just like professional sports, which it really is that, you know, consider this the off season. And guys are working out on their own, which means this is the time that coaches can be elsewhere, recruiting, connecting, fundraising, etc. It may not be the worst thing in the world for that reason alone. You don't worry about taking care of guys on your own campus, because frankly, your roster isn't there right now.
Exactly. What's up next for you, brother?
A little bit of a breather. So I shift from the basketball season. I now have a 13-day gap between now and my next basketball game, the HBCU All-Star Game, the Southern Indiana All-Star Game, which will take place at Columbus North coming up on April the 13th. But it now becomes soccer season for me. So I'm in year 12 as the voice of the Indy 11, playing the USL Championship. I actually missed the home opener on Saturday because of the boys' basketball state final. So I'll have that coming up on Saturday night. I'll sprinkle in some college baseball and some college softball. Weather forecast is pretty much like yuck for the entire week. I think I'll get some softball in tomorrow. But as I tell people, I stay busy, but April busy is a whole lot different than March busy and May busy. I will stop and smell that beautiful magnolia tree in the front of my yard for the next couple of days a little bit more than I normally do.
You do it. You deserve it, brother. I appreciate you as always. Take yourself some rest. Rest those vocal cords.
Thanks, Jimmy. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you, sir. Greg Rakestraw from the ISC Sports Network joining us here on Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Don Fisher up next. We're back with plenty more on the backside from the Hard Truth Distilling Company Studios. Welcome back to the Hard Truth Distilling Company Studios on this Monday, starting off the last Monday of the month, and even sadder, the last visual that we have of the elusive Don Fisher for
the elusive.
until, he, He goes into hibernation about this time and is not to be seen again until football season sticks its head up out of the ground.
That's true. I will not be on your show the rest of the summer. I probably could do another show with you if we ever get a roster. But for basketball. But the truth of the matter is,
then that means I'll get back with you in about 2 months, Don, and I'll check in with you.
Well, it's going to be interesting. Coach DeVries has his work cut out for him. There's no doubt about that, because there's nobody left on that roster that was here last year. I think we all knew that was probably going to be close to what was going to happen.
A best thing, really.
I agree with that, too. I think Luke Goody is still possible to get a medical red shirt. It's possible. I don't know that it's going to happen, primarily because when he came back at Illinois, he came back at the end of a season and played, 10 ball games, something like that. And that's never – I don't know that they've ever allowed a player coming back at the end of a season. He also played in an NCAA tournament game that year. So – it may not go through, and they may finally put their foot down on something at the NCAA. Who knows? We'll find out. And if Luke decides to sue them because of that, he'll probably have the suit dropped and he'll probably be able to join the roster. So who knows? We'll have to wait and see on that one. But, there's no question. Darian DeVries is hard at work. I went down last week, tried to get him to go to lunch with me. There was nobody in the office. There was not a single desk that had anything on it in the basketball offices at that point. He was sitting in there actually with the door closed, talking to somebody on the phone when I got there. I saw him through the little slit window that they have on the door. He said, he waved at me, and I backed off and went down the hallway and got away from this conversation because I didn't want to be eavesdropping, so to speak. And when he finally got off the phone, we had a chance to talk for a couple of minutes. I said, "You want to go to lunch?" And he said, "I swear to you, I'd love to go to lunch, but there's no way I can do it right now. This transfer portal is absolutely crazy, and I'm working my tail off." And so he's trying to put together a staff. I think he's got some of those people on board at this point, but they're not going to announce it until they've got the entire staff fulfilled. And I don't know when that will be, but hopefully shortly. Because he needs that help too. He needs those guys to help him do what he needs to do from a transfer portal standpoint. And, maybe to even get a guy or two from the high school ranks at this point to come to Indiana. So the workload that he has is tremendous, no question.
Absolutely. And we saw him out at the Indiana State Finals in Indianapolis over the weekend, checking out the 3A and 4A games, which were tremendous, by the way. Absolutely great games to watch, and definitely making a presence. And there were two hangers-on, I'll call them, or two of those unannounced people that announced to be on his staff. I think Nick Norton and Drew Adams were in attendance there, along with many, many others. But there's a lot of work. I mean, they keep breaking records with the portal, Don. I mean, everybody's in the portal except for you. You may be one of the few that has not entered it, and you might consider throwing your name in there. You never know. It may bring up your value if that's even possible.
Trust me, JMV wants to be on the Indiana roster in the worst way. You know who John is. And he wants to be on there. And then a guy from my church says that he's still got eligibility too. So trust me, there's a lot of people that are vying for those spots in his roster.
Well, they've got two extra ones really now with the roster being expanded to 12 or to 15 players.
Yeah. I don't know what the rule is now, but it's still only 13 scholarships, right?
No, it goes to 15 scholarship players. And
they have 15 on scholarship now.
Yeah. And I'm wondering if that, I've had too much to do, but I think that might eliminate the walk-ons.
That's interesting. I did not know that.
It's kind of like football with going to the bigger number of roster in football, but eliminating walk-ons. There's so much change.
I can't keep up with it. I can tell you that.
It's hard for me to keep up with it. I'll tell you that as well. It's going left and right, but The fact that Darren DeVries was at the state finals, he stayed right. And boy, he had a hell of a game to watch for the 4A final. It goes right to overtime. He stayed there the whole time, sitting courtside amongst many, many others. And it was worth staying for. I mean, it's the best game of the day, but right there. And that's a presence in and of itself that Indiana and Indiana fans have not been accustomed to seeing recently.
Well, that was delicate. Really nice job there, Jeremy.
Thank you, sir.
Well, you're right. And there's no question about that. And this guy to me is going to get it done. I just have this feeling about him based on his opening press conference to be introduced to the Indiana Nation, or to the Hoosier Nation, so to speak. And I was so impressed with the things that he said, how he talked about the culture that he wants to build, those kinds of things, how he goes about practice time. There are so many similarities. And I said this last week to what we saw in Kurt Cignetti's first press conference about how to build and construct a roster. And to my mind right now, his job is such a huge one at this juncture. He doesn't really have time to be doing much else. And to make that transition, come up to Indianapolis to watch those ball games on Saturday, that's huge. And it tells everybody that this guy wants to be a part of Indiana University and a part of Indiana basketball. It just tells you a lot about his belief and what he has to do, and what, because the job that he has right now is getting that staff together. And that's huge in itself. And then to be able to build that roster right away, to take that time to come up to Indianapolis and watch those games, I thought was just really important.
Yeah, and it's not that he doesn't have plenty to do, but that is of great importance, because that's a commercial to every single person exactly. That's in those stands and every player and coach in that building. Right. And maintaining the relationships with the high school coaches of great importance. You never know where the next player could be coming from. Yeah, it's going to be the portal, probably 75%, but that 25% is of great importance, because Indiana produces too much elite talent. So you don't want to burn any bridges.
Right. Oh, we'll see. It's like I say, I think it's going to be a fun watch. I think if they can put together some kind of a foreign tour, so to speak, I guess that's a possibility. I read that in the HT a couple of days ago. If he's able to put that together as well, to get these guys all on the same page that are coming in as transfer portal players and or high school recruits, whatever the case may be. I think those are culture building type things that you have to do. And so it'll be interesting to see if they can get that foreign tour type deal done and have guys have a chance to get to know each other and really build that camaraderie, so to speak.
Yeah, and I know that they've been to the Bahamas, yada, yada. I don't consider that a foreign trip. I mean, right, I know right. that officially it is now, but I'm thinking, you know, Europe. And has that happened since Bob Knight took the team to in the 80s when they went on that trip?
I don't think it, I shouldn't say that it hasn't. I can't remember if Tom Crean ever did that. I don't know if they ever did that with Tim. Well, Tom Crean had to build a roster with walk-ons for the most part when he took over. And so I don't think Indiana ever had a foreign tour, summer tour or something like that under Crean. I know they didn't do it under Archie. So yeah, I don't know if we've done that since Bob Knight. I really don't. I mean, they went to the Bahamas, which, you know, you mentioned under Mike Woodson, but that's the only trip that I can recall that has taken place outside of the basketball season.
Yeah, and that trip had great dividends for that particular group of Indiana players, and I'm not sure that the same thing would happen, but I watched the documentary on that and how that was that happened before Indiana's last national championship team. They were not, playing well together or whatever. And boom, that's the only time Bob Knight did that, oddly. And it resulted in a national title.
Yeah. There's no question. I mean, I think it does something. It builds relationships. That's what a tour like that does. And especially with an entirely new roster, I think that's going to be very, very important. So I hope they can get that done because I think it will help a lot.
I was going to say, and there's never been a day or age where that is more important than now, because it's harder because you don't have guys that have been together as long. There's
right.
On a given year, it's doubtful you have guys that have been together for 3 years or more, much less more than that. So what's up next for the Fish, baby?
Well, I here, you never asked me about my bracket, and naturally you wouldn't do that because I've never had a good one until this year. I've got,
well, let's hear about the brackets.
I have three of the four teams in this thing, and the team that probably will win the national championship, I didn't have them in there. That one team, that was Duke. And I thought when I made up my bracket, I didn't know if Flag was going to play for the Blue Devils. And so I picked them to get knocked out in the second round of the tournament. And of course they are blowing everybody away. So I've got Houston as my champion. They're playing Florida in the championship game, if I'm calling it correctly. But we'll see. But I've got Houston, Florida, and Auburn as the three teams, along with the Duke Blue Devils. I didn't pick them. That's the only team I didn't pick.
I am in the same camp, Don. I had Duke getting upset and not being in the Final Four. I had the other three, and we'll see how that goes. But Duke, I became a Duke believer over the weekend.
Oh, I'm me like, too.
Okay. I'm in. I give up, Uncle. I give. I was like, wow. So that's what happens when you play defense against a team like Alabama, who scored, yeah, 2,000 points in the game before that.
Well, it knocked in 25 threes, yeah, in 51 attempts. That's just unbelievable. But I've got Houston as my champion. I'm despite the fact that people, Hoosier Nation, a lot of the people in the Hoosier Nation don't like Kelvin, I still like Kelvin. I think he's a great basketball coach. And here's the other thing. Bruce Pearl at Auburn has done a phenomenal job. Obviously, they knock out Michigan State and Tom Izzo yesterday. But look, I mean, you know what? This has been a good tournament. And there's a lot of chalk there. But that's going to be more the scenario these days in college basketball, yeah, because of the transfer portal. It's just going to happen that way. You're going to see very few. I don't say you're not going to see some upsets, but you're not going to see as many upsets in the NCAA tournament as it used to be.
No, and I think these teams are actually being seeded more accurately to what they are as well, because
all the analytics and that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so much involved now, and it's gotten to be such a science, so to speak, in regard to how you evaluate teams. And look, the guys that are doing that for a living, the Ken Palms and the Lenardis and those kinds of people, they know what they're talking about, and they've seen it. And it's not feel anymore. It's more about the analytics and the actual what's going on the floor.
Well, absolutely. And enjoy your hibernation period. I hope that they have lights down under the tunnels there so you can see all the golf courses and all of that. But
trust me. I've been out there twice already. So I've been on the golf course a couple of times here of late, and that's going to increase as we get
forward. It wasn't yesterday. I can guarantee you that.
No, it's been some bad weather and those kind of things happen. But from my perspective, I've got a really nice summer coming up here. So I'm looking forward to it.
Looking forward to it as well.
Oh, you know what? You know what I ought to say? I mean, I've gone to two football practices last week, too.
Well, because unfortunately, I'm not able to get to them because of the timing of them.
Well, nothing has changed. The football team.
Not a lot going on right now.
The football team is looking good. The two practices I went to, Kurt Cignetti's practices are so much fun to watch because they literally work their tails off, and there's very little downtime. And primarily, it's an opportunity to see these guys, see how talented they are. And I actually think this team – maybe not from a depth standpoint, but from a actual talent perspective, is a better football team than we saw a year ago.
I agree. I've said that over and over. I tell people, I go, the record might not match it this year because the schedule is ramped up. But I see a potential 10-2 team if they win one of these tough road games, which I think that they kind of need to do because of the talk last year. But if they can get that done, that will get them back to the CFP. A 10-2 Indiana team to me is going to be back in the CFP. 9-3 is very the easy middle mark to say, and 8-4 is crazy as this sounds. 8-4 should be the absolute bottom. I'm
that used to be the top. That used to be the top we talked about.
That used to be a wish list.
No, it's fun. Indiana football is without question the real deal. And I can't wait to see it this fall.
Looking forward to it, brother. The great Don Fisher joining us here on Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Enjoy it, brother. We look forward to talking to you again soon.
All right. Thanks, Jimmy. See ya.
Thank you, sir. We've got to take a break from the Hard Truth Distilling Company studios. Welcome back to the Hard Truth Distilling Company studios on this Monday. Very glad to have you along with us. As always, grateful and very appreciative. Just finished up with the great Don Fisher and some more Indiana basketball news. And this one is not as enjoyable, I guess. But Zach Osterman, who joins us each week and, of course, is the insider or the Indian insider for the Indy Star for IU Sports, has put out a tweet that a representative for longtime IU trainer Tim Garl announced this morning. Garl will not be renewed for next season. Garl's last day is Monday. The statement said Scott Dolson informed Garl he wanted a fresh start for IU Sports Medicine set up inside the program. And of course, this is all tied back to the suit against Dr. Bamba, the long time ago team doctor back during the Knight era and before and during that time. Of course, there is a class action lawsuit going on involving some former players. I think there are five names on it currently. We'll have to follow that and going forward. It's, man, you always hate to see this stuff. And it's hard to comment on it because there's so much legalese. Sometimes people's names are put on for different reasons. And Tim Garl's name is on, you know, the side of the locker room there as the training center is named after him. But he has been serving Indiana for decades as well. So that is something that is not, I guess I never thought about that one. But it is not surprising, I guess, at the end of the day, because it is an opportunity, again, to start a fresh period. And this has nothing to do with Tim Garl, but I understand the need to do it. There is been so much carryover, but it never changes for Indiana in basketball. You know, there's just always been a connection where a lot of programs probably, you know, you see just complete severs at times. That's never been the case for Indiana. They've always had a lot of carryover to the past, which a lot of times that's good, but not always. If you're trying to change the entire culture, whatever. And so I understand Scott Dolson's move here, and I think that IU fans should understand it. It is in the best interest of Indiana basketball, for sure. It's probably something that's just in the best interest. It also comes down to showing, as far as the lawsuit goes, that you're taking it seriously. And it's just a necessary thing to do. You need a complete, we talk about the roster. Well, you know, it doesn't just stop there. You've got other people that are connected to the program in various ways. There are so many positions behind the scenes that it's hard in this day and age to sever everything. And I'm not saying you need to, but this is different. This is, it's not like someone that was brought on yesterday. So there's going to be a lot of people that are not happy and don't understand why this particular move was made, why it needs to be made. I feel bad for someone like Tim Garl, who has given so much of his life. And it is, I know for a large portion of the Indiana fan base, it's going to be hard because you're seeing a complete severance of the past. And unfortunately, it's like I said, it's just something that's necessary. If fans want a return to glory, so to speak, then they have to understand you have to just completely abrade the wounds, go in and just clean them out and start over. And they are doing that, from players to coaches to personnel, and it will be different, but some similarities. I mean, there's some certain things, the passion, I think fans are going to see a return to the style of basketball that they have wanted to see. Yeah, Carl, it's what we're talking about that now. Gritty was first on that. And thank you. But it's hard, but sometimes you just have to make hard decisions in life. And this is one that Scott Dolson has made. You got to give it to Scott Dolson. He has really done a lot of good things when left to do it himself. And I think that has been seen by Pam Whitten, for one, the president, and she has complete confidence in Scott Dolson doing the things that he needs to do his job, and to do it to the best for Indiana athletics and IU athletics. You now have a football program that can play amongst the elite. That wasn't even a thought of ever even being a possibility. People would have just settled for competitive. But you're beyond that. But you can't stay there without doing the things and making the moves that keeps you in that position. Indiana basketball is not playing with the elite right now. But that is a change that is way easier than most. But Scott Dolson wants to be in the position of, once reaching that, they're already prepared to keep going. I think that the moves that Scott Dolson makes are all in the best interest of IU athletics and moving forward. Now, we've also seen a ton of exodus from the IU women's program, and it doesn't even come close to the men's, but because there just hasn't been much prior. There hasn't been players really hitting the portal from the IU women's team.
Part of it is just a different era. Now, Garzon is the latest to go in. Is that the fifth or the sixth player? I'm not even sure how many of the IU women's team that were in there, but a lot of their starters. And so it's going to be interesting to see what Terry Morin can do here, how she can handle and navigate the portal to reinvent her team, because she's going to have to do that for the first time. We even, if you look, Purdue has a player in the portal. Nothing, no one of note from a playing standpoint, but his last name is Waddell. He's the son of Brian Waddell, a much beloved basketball player at Purdue. His son kind of inherited that, although Brian Waddell played a lot for Purdue. His son has not, but the fans loved him. But he's in the portal. He realizes that he's probably not going to play or whatever the case, and is not content to just sit on the Purdue bench. Now, I'm assuming, I don't know what's going on there, but I'm just pointing out that these big massive changes that have happened to college athletics are going to start happening to teams like Purdue. I've said that last year. When Purdue brought in, with originally six, but eventually five freshmen, I said, that's going to catch up to them. You cannot, I said, the following year, that means with your other underclassmen, half of your team will be underclassmen, half of your roster. And so I'm like, how's that going to work out for you? Purdue is going to have to begin entering the portal world as well. Everyone is going to. It's just part of the new era. It's just part of the new world. It is what it is. You don't have to like it. No one really likes it. But you also have to understand there are four number one seeds in the final four. Some people could say, well, that stinks. Why? You're going to get, these games should be freaking great. And that's what you want. You want great games. Florida, Duke, Auburn, and Houston. The teams that we all thought were probably the four best teams in the country, give or take, are there. And I think that should provide great basketball. I'm not hating it. I'm just not. There's a reason the ratings are skyrocketed high. People enjoy it. They've enjoyed watching what they've seen, and I think it's going to continue. No reason for it not to. No reason for it not to. Man, that is going to wrap it up for the first hour. We've got lots more coming up on the backside. We've got to hit a break from the Hard Truth Distilling Company Studios. Welcome back to the Hard Truth Distilling Company Studios on this Monday. Glad to have you along for the ride. Appreciate you so much. Looking forward to talking to Dustin Napierik in a little while. As the Pacers are keeping on. But I'm also looking forward to talking to him about everything else that has gone on. But it was a fun night up in Indianapolis at Gainbridge Fieldhouse. Seeing AJ Moyer. Forgot about my man AJ that was there as well. Checking things out. He is always a presence down there and maintaining ties. Chris Collins, like I said, from Northwestern was there. Micah Shrewsbury. The only, ironically, the guy who has recruited the state better than anyone over the last decade was not Matt Painter. Ironically, he played in Indianapolis the night before, but was not in attendance at the state finals. So a little surprising, but not a big deal. I'm sure that even though there may not have been someone he was actively recruiting, I'm just a little surprised that he didn't make an appearance, because he is always so good at that stuff and usually is always on it. But three people that were there, as I've said, Darren DeVries, Nick Norton, and Drew Adams. Those last two names, probably, well, pretty sure those are, they'll be getting announced here soon as IU assistants. Drew Adams, as we mentioned earlier, son of Mark Adams, who runs Indiana Elite. Very good connections there. Currently at, or was it Cincinnati? And now the roster building begins. You've got some visits coming in today in Bloomington for the Hoosiers. And I expect to slowly start seeing some those names to leak out nearly 2 weeks after Darren DeVries took office, so to speak. Two of the top transfer prospects in the country, Iowa transfer Josh Dix and Xavier transfer Ryan Conwell, scheduled to visit Indiana today. Dix is a 6'5" guard from Council Bluffs, Iowa. He spent the last three seasons with the Hawkeyes, which, again, keeping someone for 3 years, pretty good. Pretty good deal. He appeared in 97 games over his three-year college career there. He's a 42% three-point shooter. He has one season of eligibility remaining. 6'4" guard Conwell, 6'4" guard from Indianapolis, set to play for his fourth team in as many years. I don't like that necessarily, but it doesn't matter if it's the last one, and especially when you're coming home. I'm coming home. But yeah, he was originally from Pike High School, began his collegiate career at South Florida before making stops at Indiana State. If you'll remember from that magical run the Sycamores made a season ago, or two seasons ago, and then with Xavier this past season. At Xavier, he averaged 16.5 points per game while shooting 41.3% from beyond the arc on 7 attempts per game. Let me say that again. 41% on 7 attempts per game. That is a shooter. Shooter. So, they've got that going for them, which is nice. Indiana also allegedly interested in UCLA transfer guard Sebastian Mack. Guard, babies. Guards, guards, guards. 6'3" guard from Chicago, Mack appeared in 34 games as a sophomore for UCLA, starting just one, but as a true freshman 2 years ago, he played in 33 games for Mick Cronin's squad. He made 30 starts during the season the year before last. He averaged 12 points and 3.5 rebounds a game, an assist and a half. He shot 38, almost 39% from the field, 28% from three on just three attempts per game. So he's not a great long-distance shooter. But he was named to the All-Pac-12 freshman team for his efforts. Last year, he averaged just over 9.5 points per game. So his stats remained about the same. He shot 31% from three, despite coming off the bench and playing 21 minutes per game. His usage rate remained high at 25%. So looking at a lot of different guys. Indiana also reportedly in contact with San Francisco forward Tyrone Riley IV. They're busy. They're busy. Speaking of busy. Justin DePerrick.
There's a segue.
Tell you, brother, how was your weekend? The Pacers, because of all that has been going on in Indianapolis, they've been road dogs, man.
We got shipped. Yeah.
Shipped out.
What's that?
NCAA in town, state high school finals in town. Pacers had to go back.
Yeah, no, I mean, obviously that's typical whenever it's tournament time for the Pacers to get shipped. And they only had a two-game road trip. It wasn't like they had to spend the entire week away or anything like that. It's the back half of their schedule has been really, you know, home heavy because, you know, the first half of the pre-All-Star period, you know, they obviously had a lot of home game or had a lot of road games, you know, did got all of their big sort of road swings out of the way for the most part. So this was just a two-game trip. Basically, it was who was it? DC and Oklahoma City. So they
played. But let's talk about what happened in DC because 162 points.
I mean, they did play the worst team in the league.
I get so, it, but
not only the worst team in the league, but it's late March, so they're in active tank mode. And they did not have anybody available, but yeah, I mean, they went off shooting wise, you know, obviously 27 3-pointers, you know, 162 points is their franchise NBA record. Basically, it's the most points they've scored since they've been in the NBA. I think they had like a buck 80 in an ABA game once or something like that, or some, they have eclipsed that set. They eclipsed that several times in the 70s when they were in the NBA. But in the NBA, in all that time, that's the most points they've ever scored. 27 3-pointers is the most they've ever scored. Only four teams have ever made more than 27 threes in a game in NBA history. And most of that is in like the last 5 years too. I mean, that's obviously, this is the 3-point shooting boom, in the NBA. And so, you know, almost every, anybody who's made more than 27 has made more than 27 like the last 4 years. But still, and obviously they didn't take the foot off the gas. I mean, they were just bringing everybody else in. Johnny Furphy, I think, hit the game winning, the record breaking three. So yeah, they just went off. I mean, obviously they have in their past, taken, you know, sometimes messed around with tanking teams or even just teams that were shorthanded. But after getting beat on a buzzer beater by LeBron on Wednesday night, they were like, okay, we're annoyed here. We intend to just beat somebody up, and they just happened to be shooting it really well. Halliburton in particular was really shooting well. I think he was 7 of 10, and you know, basically he gets going early, and then that was sort of the end of it. And just everybody was just splashing threes, and they just went off.
Yeah, and that's okay. It's good to get mad. They should have. They let the game against the Lakers slip away, but it's not going to really cost them in the end. Maybe it helps them. Maybe it gives you a refocus, but I'd love to see that fire that they brought afterward. What, 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 11 games remaining in the regular season. So is that no?
No, I think they're down to 9, if I'm not mistaken. Let me double check my math. Pretty sure they're at, let me look here. I think they're 43-31, which that's 74 games. They play 82, so they're down to 8. And they have a 7-game lead on the Hawks at 7. So they're like basically like one game away from clinching a playoff spot, a top 6 spot. 1.5 games up on the Pistons. They were kind of fortunate. The Pistons kind of, I don't know if they had a meltdown. I didn't really watch that game, but they got in a brawl last night with Minnesota and ended up losing that game. So they're 1.5 up on the Pistons. They're 3 games up on the Bucks, who are really fading since the news that Damian Lillard's got a blood clot thrombosis situation. He's out for probably a month. The Bucks are still hopeful that he's going to play again. But, you know, if the Bucks continue to play like they're playing, they won't be around long enough for him to get back. So, you know, their Pacers are kind of benefiting from that right now, but tracking towards at this point, a Pacers Pistons series that they would host in the first round. They would host 4 out of 7.
So I think that maybe as I'm looking at the schedule, it shows 2 games against the Cavs back to back.
Close. 2 out of their last 3 are against the Cavs, which is not bad because you're looking at a Cavs team that by that point will probably have clinched the best record in the East and probably will be out of it, basically won't have the opportunity to clinch the best record in the whole league. So that's a great time to catch the Cavs. You know, they would be in a great spot in that case. Maxine's deciding whether she wants to go outside or not. So I'm just going to sit here at the door for a minute while we have this conversation. But yeah, basically they might catch a Cavs team that's not playing anybody. And so that'd be their best case scenario. So they have a chance to win, you know, grab one of those games. There's a chance it'll mean more to them, more to the Pacers than it does to the Cavs. Also possibility that last game is a game where they both clinched playoff position and they don't, you know, nobody plays anybody. And so that could just be young guys going at it in that, you know, end of the season game. So we can see how that one shakes out. Pistons, Bucks also played their last two games against each other. So if Milwaukee gets up off the canvas, you know, that game has a chance to be pretty interesting. So it could be an interesting last week of the season. It could not be. So that will, you know, that's obviously to be determined. But yeah, so they could either be getting a Cleveland team that is, you know, fighting tooth and nail for the last bits of home court, you know, again, that might still be in it with the Thunder by then, or they could not, and they could just be taking it easy those last two games, and they might be a couple easy wins for the Pacers, or they still need them.
Take it easy, take it easy. Well, that's the way to go out in the season, I guess. It would be great if you could rest some guys, but the Pacers are not in a position to really do that, are they? They have to keep fighting.
No, I mean, they could be. It's just a question of where it goes down the stretch. I mean, they might have to play it all the way down to the end. I mean, obviously, the positive thing is they should be, you know, last year they needed to fight to the last game of the year to get the six. You know, basically, like they had to beat Atlanta. And then they ended up beating bad. I think they 157 on them again in that game. I'm pretty sure that's right. And, you know, they had to play to the end to get the 60 and end up riding the 60 to the Eastern Conference Finals. So obviously you want to get out of the play-in round. But they're very close to clinching not being in the play-in round. You know, if they win and the Hawks lose, I think it's over. I don't even know if they need the Hawks to lose. I mean, I think if they win tonight, you know, they play the Kings tonight and they've got Charlotte and Utah this week's two other teams that are tanking. So, you know, they should be able to pick up at least one of those. So they're very close to picking up a top six seed and clinching it. But they, you know, they're obviously going to want that top four. You know, getting the four means that you get to host four out of seven in the first round. And I think especially if you're going to be playing Detroit, and it looks like they will, I think home court's important because I think obviously, you know, when Detroit cares, you know, that's a tough place to play, you know, and obviously they've already mixed it up with the Pistons a couple times this year. It got, you know, it got physical. It got chippy the last couple, and the Pistons just are chippy. They're chippy as an organization traditionally, but as a team, they're pretty chippy. And so like that's sort of thing where like home court matters. You know, you don't want to be playing in their building because that place can really get on top of your head. So you'd prefer to be four out of seven at home instead of four out of seven at their place. So I think getting the four versus the five, if it's going to be between them and Detroit, you'd much rather have the four there.
Speaking of Detroit, little chippy. Detroit back to
Isaiah Stewart. Isaiah Stewart is a menace, but I don't think that's, you know. But bottom line, I mean, they got after JB Bickerstaff. I mean, Bickerstaff has a case for Coach of the Year. What's interesting is it's between him and his replacement in Cleveland. As far as I'm concerned, I mean, I don't know that I have a vote. If I have a vote, no one's told me about it yet. But JB, I think, has done a phenomenal job in Detroit after being fired in Cleveland. And the guy who took his job in Cleveland has done a phenomenal job. Kenny Atkinson's really taken them to the next level. But Bickerstaff's really, you know, just he generally coaches with a chip on his shoulder, and he's had even more of one this year, and obviously turned a Detroit team that, you know, had been in the lottery for four straight years. I don't even know if they'd won more than 23 games since like 1920. And so it's been, you know, for them to turn around, I mean, I think they've won triple the number of games they won last year. It's really been a remarkable turnaround. So, and they're playing with a chip on their shoulder, and that's Detroit, man. I mean, that's basically who the Pistons are and have been whenever they've been good. You know, any good Pistons team that you can think of has been edgy. And so this team looks edgy, and they're really young and really talented. Cade Cunningham is a phenomenal player. I mean, I think he's going to be all NBA this year. You know, they've Jaden Ivey caught a tough break, but you know, with, I think he broke his leg, but I mean, since he's, you know, basically up until he went out, he was dramatically better than he was last year. I mean, it really seemed like he was losing his confidence last year, and he really, you know, found another level this year. You know, they got one of the Thompson twins, Osar, who's, I think, been terrific for them. And, you know, some veteran pieces they picked up, Tobias Harris, Tim Hardaway Jr.'s hurt, he's out. But, you know, those two guys have made a huge difference. You know, that's a team that's tough. So, you know, basically if it's Pacers, Pistons in the first round, that is going to be a fun, fun series.
Yeah, and looking forward to it. And as far as how competitive the Pacers can get to this year, how far they can go, they're not going to sneak up on anybody this year.
Sure enough.
And not that they snuck up on someone, but I think they kind of did last year with their talent offensively, and how this year the defense is slightly better. So can they get further? Not further, but yeah, it's going to be harder this year, it seems, to win the conference than it was last year.
Yeah, because the East, I mean, basically last year you had one team running away with it in Boston, and this year you have two. And so basically, like, there's kind of roadblocks for whoever you are coming through, where last year it was everybody from 2 to 8 was within like 3-4 games, something like that. I mean, I think the Knicks won 50 games and they were the 2 seed. You know, this year you're going to have two teams that are, you know, probably going to hit 60. I mean, Cleveland's at 60 already, at 60 and 15. The Celtics are 55 and 19. They've won 8 in a row. I mean, the Celtics are ripping now and they're 55 and 19. So there's a good chance they get to 60 wins. And I don't think you want to mess with either of those teams. Obviously the Celtics have, you know, they have won a championship, and they're, you know, kind of rounding into the shape that you need to be in. It seems like every you know, 3 to 6, that Knicks, Pacers, Pistons, Bucks is pretty close. You know, Milwaukee's obviously fading, if, you know, again with Lillard out. But, you know, Knicks, Pacers, Pistons is a pretty tight little pack in terms of, you know, what they're like. But you know, Cleveland and Boston are going to be tough for anybody to get. Obviously the most likely scenario is that Cleveland, Boston is the Eastern Conference Finals, and whoever, you know, that they'll, you know, knock out whoever gets to them. So it is going to be harder. You know, like last year, you know, the Knicks were way more ripe, I guess, for an upset as a 2 seed than Boston will be this year, and certainly that Cleveland will be. And so that's what makes it tougher. I mean, I do think obviously teams see them coming. They ruffled some feathers last year, to put it mildly. There are teams who want to beat the Pacers now because they talk, you know, they make noise, they chirp a little bit. And so, like, you know, Milwaukee in particular, the Knicks in particular, you know, basically they're probably going to avoid both of them, but the Pistons as well, have been, you know, like, called the Pacers out for talking too much in games, and the Pacers like, what, beat us more or less. Like, we're allowed to talk, you know, it's basketball. What's the problem here? And so, you know, like it makes for some fiery games and stuff like that. But yeah, I mean, Detroit's going to want to beat them bad. You know, if they get Pistons in the first round, they're going to get a very, very motivated Pistons team. But there'd be the same case if they get the Bucks or the Knicks, you know. And so they'd have to fade to get the Knicks. I think the Knicks are going to end up get, you know, not cruising, but I think the Knicks are going to get the 3 seed. And so, you know, I think it'll probably be, you know, Knicks, Bucks, Pacers, Pistons at this point. But if things switched around for whatever reason and they played any one of those teams, you know, it basically all of those teams have been like, we want to beat those guys in some shape or form or another, obviously, because they got the Knicks and the Bucks last year. And, you know, this year the Pistons have been kind of a new rivalry. So any of those teams is going to be really motivated to beat the Pacers. But, you know, the Pacers are going to be motivated as well. So you know, no one's going to be sneaking up on anybody in any of those first round series. But, you know, again, whether it's Cleveland or Boston, if they get past the first round, and, you know, presumably there's no, you know, massive first round upset of Boston or Cleveland, you know, basically whoever comes out of the play-in round would get those two teams. And it would be a shocker if, you know, one of those, whether it's Atlanta or Orlando or somebody like that, pulled off a 7-game, you know, series win over Cleveland or Boston. I don't think anybody sees that coming. So the more likely scenario is they're looking at, you know, right now the path would be Detroit and then Cleveland. And so Cleveland's not going to be, I mean, they might be beatable on sort of the basis of you know, nobody necessarily expected them to be the one seed this year. But they're tough. I mean, they're tough and they're good. And so that's going to be a really tough team to take down in a semifinal round.
Yeah. And then you look at the West and they've got the one dominant team, but boy, they might be the most dominant team in all of the NBA.
Oh, they are. I mean, they were. So, yeah, the Thunder handled the Pacers on Saturday night in Oklahoma City, and that team is tough. I mean, you really see it. I don't think I get a vote this year, but, like, I mean, I was leaning towards Joker's the MVP, but I'm leaning towards Shai Gilgeous-Alexander now. He's fantastic. I mean, and just his ability to really carry a team, and even on a night when he's not great, like, he is just so in control of a basketball game, and you have to devote so much to keep him from scoring that he ends up just opening things up for everybody else. I mean, they hit like 17 threes, you know, Lugans Dorton, Isaiah Joe were 11 of 13 from three or something crazy, because, I mean, he just creates so much gravity, and he's just such a tough guy to keep away from the rim, and he can score anywhere, and you can draw a lot of fouls. I mean, like, he's carrying them, and they've had one two-game losing streak all year, and it was in November. That's the last time they lost two in a row. It was November. Like, they just, you know, I mean, it's like 8 in a row, 16 out of 17, and they're just, you know, like, they're defensively built really well. It's super tough to score in them. Lugans Dorter is one of the just, you know, he's basically a linebacker playing basketball, and, you know, trying to get around him in the first place is really difficult. But even if they switch off, you've got Kayson Wallace is a terrific defender. That, you know, each of the Jalen Williamses are tough defenders. Shai is a pretty good defender himself, and he's the guy they hide, you know, and he'd be a really good defensive player on most teams. You know, they've got terrific rim protection. They've got everything you need. I mean, they're young, but they're edgy, and, you know, I mean, like, I'd say they're the favorite to win it right now. I really think they have a chance to actually do it. You know, so again, Boston's got the experience, and, you know, they're the marquee team, and they've got some really, really good players. But, you know, I mean, Thunder look terrific. So, you know, that's a tough, they're going to be a tough out for everybody. I mean, they're in a similar position, you know, record wise that Boston was last year. They've got a 14 game lead in the West. So they've already wrapped up, home court throughout the Western Conference playoffs. They're just trying to, wrap up home court in the finals, basically, to have the better record than Cleveland. And, you know, make sure that they have the finals, you know, finals home court, regardless of who they play. But they're in really good shape. So, I mean, they look terrific. And the Pacers came out of that one basically like, wow, like they kind of felt like they didn't even play that bad. And, you know, like, the Thunder still got them by 20. And, you know, I mean, Shai was 3 of 11 in the first half and still had 15 points, you know, just because they found some way. He found some way to just get fouled and, you know, just do what he wanted to do. So, I mean, that's a really, really, really tough team. And I do think at this point, I do think Shai's going to win MVP.
Well, his name sure is mentioned a lot. And how long has he been in the league now?
Been like, was it 5 or 6 years? I mean, he started in LA. I mean, he's like 26. So I'm trying to think how many. I mean, I've got to look it up. Maxine has complaints and thoughts about where she wants to be today. But yeah, no, he's obviously one of those guys that went there, you know, had sort of a change of venue, became the guy, and you didn't necessarily know if that was going to be who he was, you know, basically, like, if he was going to be like the primary scorer on a team. It's like, he seemed like he might be a backup point guard or whatever, but I mean, he really took a leap when he got to go to Oklahoma City. He played 1 year with the Clippers, and so this is year 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 with Oklahoma City, and you know, really his entire time there, he's been really, really good. But, you know, averaged, you know, 23, 24 a game in his second year in Oklahoma City, has been top five in the MVP the last 2 years. This is going to be the third straight year he averages 30 points a game. And he's just really taken his game to a different level over the last three seasons in Oklahoma City.
Yeah, so we'll take a quick break. We've got Mr. Dustin DePirik with us from the Indy Star. We'll be back with plenty more on the backside from the Hard Truth Distilling Company studios right after these messages. Welcome back to the Hard Truth Distilling Company studios. The great Dustin DePirik from the Indy Star with us. And Dustin, in college hoops, a lot going on. Of course, we are at the Final Four and very chalky. Now, not a surprise as all number one seeds make the Final Four, but it was going that way anyway, so it wasn't a huge surprise. I thought I had three out of the four. I thought I was not a Duke believer. I am now. I was like, I almost sent out a tweet. I'm a Duke believer. But yeah, that was a kind of wild to watch how they did that. But you've got a great Final Four set, and I'm good with it because I think these should be outstanding games.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I think it's odd. I think we get into this discourse about like what's necessary for the NCAA tournament to be good, or like, oh, there has to be this many Cinderellas, or it's got to be this, like, just let it play out and it'll be different next year. Like, you know, it's like, there's this new discourse of like, I, there will never be upsets again. We have ended the Cinderella and college basketball is stuck this particular way. Like, it's a single elimination tournament. Stuff happens, you know, like, and every once in a while, maybe something stuff doesn't happen and it goes according to form. But doesn't mean it's going to go according to form forever. You know, like, some years it's going to go one way, some years it's going to go another way. I mean, like, we're 2 years removed from Florida Atlantic and San Diego State being in the Final Four, you know, like, stuff happens, you know? And so this is one of those years where it's like, and it's not bad no matter what it is. I mean, like, some years you have a wild collection of, you know, upsets and, you know, double digit seeds making the Sweet 16 and maybe even get one in the Final Four. And that's crazy. And that's fun in its own way. And then you're like, this is fun in its own way because you have the best teams. And, you know, there have been a lot of years where you've seen a really, really, really good team get beat in the Sweet 16 or the Elite Eight. You don't get to find out what they would be like in a Final Four. And you don't necessarily see kind of the titans of college basketball play. You know, I mean, like, in the tournament, in a single elimination tournament, you sign up for random, you know, and you don't know how it's going to go, you know, like, best of seven, straighten things out a little bit. Basically it, you know, minimizes the amount of just sort of like chaos theory, and single elimination maximizes it. So it's just like, that's what you sign up for. And it is going to be cool to be like, all right, like, you know, Auburn, Florida, like Duke, Houston, those are going to be really, really good games. You know, I mean, those four teams have been phenomenal all year. And this has also been one of those years where it didn't feel like, oh, there's only four teams that are really good and, you know, everybody else is at a distant level. You know, I mean, like, Tennessee was the one two seed I picked. I mean, I generally go pretty chalky, and I didn't have a chance to watch as much college basketball as I usually do this year. So I just kind of I didn't take a whole lot of chances. But I was like, all right, well, somebody's not going to make it. There's going to be one seed that doesn't make it. And I just like, all right, well, Houston probably has the toughest draw. And then they went out there and Tennessee could not make a shot yesterday to save their lives. And so, you know, and so there you have it. You have four really good, you know, four number one seeds. And yeah, I mean, it's got a chance to be really good. I mean, I've got Duke, Florida in the final, and I think that has a chance to be, that would be a fantastic final. And Duke looks great. Florida looks really good. You know, Auburn looked really solid taking down Michigan State, and Houston is that just tough, nasty Kelvin Sampson defensive team. And so, you know, I'm sure there were people that weren't thrilled to see Kelvin come to Indianapolis and get to a Final Four, but man, those guys just, they, every team he has can really, really, really guard. And, you know, they did terrific, kept the ball out of the paint, made Tennessee shoot jump shots, and Tennessee didn't make any jump shots.
No, and that with Alabama, I kind of knew after they just went nuts. I'm like, that's not going to happen.
Not sustainable. And, yeah.
No. And I didn't expect them to fall off the planet, but boy, they certainly came crashing back down to earth.
Sure did. Sure did. No, absolutely. That's game I didn't have a chance to watch because that was right lined up with Thunder Pacers on Saturday night. So that game was pretty much over by the time we got done with interviews and stuff like that. But Duke has been the most solid team so far in terms of, you know, being able to kind of pull it out. I mean, everybody else has kind of had a little bit more of a scary stretch, I guess, in terms of almost getting beat. But, you know, I think they've had some tough ones too, but I mean, they've been really impressive. You know, Cooper Flagg has been fantastic. You know, the other pieces they have, you know, Tyrese Proctor has been good. The other guard is, you know, his name is escaping me right now, but that's a solid group of guys. And so, yeah, like, those four teams look really, really good, and it's going to be a really fun Final Four.
Yeah, and I'm looking forward to it. There's a lot of action going on in the portal over the weekend, the state finals. We had a litany of college coaches there, including Darren DeVries, and two of his soon-to-be-announced staffers were with him. So there was just so much going on over the weekend. It was literally a cornucopia of basketball in the state of Indianapolis, which is no surprise, no shocker, but it's always just there's no other town that can do that, man.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, no, I mean, for sure. And obviously, it helps that the NCAA is right there, so you know that's quite helpful. That they want once a year where they can just want to be able to have at least one tournament site that's that close, and it makes it kind of easy to function. You get the Horizon League to kind of run the show, and you know it's easy for them. Basically, it's on rails to put together a tournament site, whether it's first and second round, or it's Sweet 16 and Elite Eight, or it's a Final Four. You know, and so obviously that helps the cause. India is certainly built for it. You know, basically India has spent really the last 50 years building itself towards hosting stuff. I mean, that's basically been the kind of civic goal going back to the 70s, to be a team, be a city that hosts things in sports in particular, but everything else. And so they're really well built for it, and obviously just have sort of the basketball DNA of the place, which helps the cause. And so, yeah, it's they're going to be well built for that. I had some friends in town, basically a group of guys that goes to a different tournament site every year. And so they came to Indy this year, and you know, I didn't get to see them until last night, obviously, but they said they really enjoyed it because they could get that sense that everything was you know, basically well built to be convenient for people coming to visit. So I thought that was really cool hearing about that from people that aren't from Indy. So, Indy's well built for it, and this is the time of year where it shines.
And Darren DeVries, what an introduction to Indiana high school basketball. First of all, I was there, and there were people all the way up to the – it was not packed, don't get me wrong, but that was because you had eight different sets of fans in and out of the stadium all day. But for the 4A game, it was not full, but there were people all the way to the top. It had to be 75% full. And that's pretty daggone good for two teams, which there were probably some holdovers from the first game. Who wouldn't want to see that? But the coaches that were there, it was a who's who in Indiana. Only one that wasn't there that I've mentioned that kind of is weird was Matt Painter, Mr. Indiana recruiter. I'm sure that there was a reason, you know, no one he's recruiting, or they played the night before, who knows. But great, great weekend, and Indiana getting off to a great start in all of that as well. Speaking of shenanigans, has the call on that, and I just confirmed this, that Stanford has hired former Indianapolis coach Frank Reich to a one-year deal as interim head coach. And, of course, I don't remember his tag, general manager or whatever it is for Stanford.
Andrew Luck.
Andrew Luck. Maybe that's why I've seen the reemergence of Captain Andrew Luck on Twitter. One of my favorite Twitter accounts of all time.
Love that.
He has returned. I was like, oh, I thought he had been lost to the annals of time. But he is risen like a phoenix from the ashes. College football is starting to take on an NFL-esque kind of look. I'm not sure how far that will swing, but we already know that Kurt Cignetti, his practices are very NFL-esque. And so you've got, of course, Bill Belichick over at North Carolina now. Very interesting that it's going that direction, but not surprising because of all the changes that have happened.
Right. Money. I mean, basically I think it's sort of like how, you know, I think that's just the biggest thing is it's just now these guys get paid and it changes the dynamic. And so it makes sense to be able to bring people in there that understand what it's like to coach guys who are getting paid. You know, it's a different ball game, and you know, it's also different to say like you can move, you can go someplace. Like there, you are no longer considered. I'm not going to use where I was going to go with that. Like for all this time, on some level, you know, you've been coaching these people who you know, had limited mobility and didn't, you know, basically there was no money involved. They never had a sense of what their market value was. And so when they have a sense of what their market value is, then, you know, like they approach you different, you know, you approach them different and you almost, I mean, you have to treat them like more of adults basically. But also there's this notion of you have to re-recruit them all the time. And so what you ultimately have to do is say, okay, like, you have to coach them in such a way that that tells them, okay, like this money that you're getting right now should.
It should. And we lost Dustin there for a second. He'll rejoin us, but there you go. You're back.
Am I back? But yeah, no, I was just going to say that basically, like, you know, now they understand what, you know, they have a better sense of like what they're getting back from this. So if you're Bill Belichick or someone like that, or if you're Frank Reich, you know, it's similar to, you know, Mike Woodson's message to say like, all right, like I know how to get you there, you know, like stick with this and I know how to get you there. Don't play in four different schools in four different years. You know, like you want to go somewhere and stay where you're going to be built into a professional player, you know? And I think that's going to be the message for more of them. And it's like, okay, you're going to run this like a professional operation so that you're going to have a sense of what it's like. And that's, I mean, and frankly, you know, that's how college more frequently works in the first place, like not athletics, college itself, you know, in terms of more better setting you up for understanding whatever field it is that you're getting into, you know, and being able to create scenarios where it's more like this is what, you know, your life is going to be like if you get into whatever profession it is you're studying. I mean, certainly in media, you know, like you see more of a sense of, you know, professors and departments being able to create scenarios for kids to understand this is what this job looks like at a professional level. You know, like this is what you're going to start to see in football and basketball, because that's how you can keep somebody is say like, all right, like this is what 4 years looks like if you stay. And this is what your development looks like if you stay and don't flit around to whoever gives you a little bit more money here, a little bit more money there. If you're thinking big time money, if you're thinking, you know, your long term setup, you know, get in with us and this is what you're going to build. And so, you know, I think it is fascinating to see Luck go to a place and say, you know, all right, I want a guy that I know knows how to coach at the next level. So then that's fascinating that he's made that move. Obviously, you know, heard enough apparently about Troy Taylor to make a quick decision and say, okay, this guy can't be the guy anymore. And to be able to turn that around and get a significant name higher at Stanford, you know, quickly, certainly speaks well. And so, you know, you're also going to see how things change for these general managers. I mean, it definitely seems like up until this point, this general manager job has been like kind of it's almost been like its own kind of director of ops job, but with a payroll. And this is different, you know, basically this is different. A general manager coming up and making the coach choice, you know, so it'll be interesting to see if that starts to happen. Basically, if you start to employ, if athletic departments start to employ a general manager independent of the coach, and have that person sort of more in charge of that program, you know, that's going to be interesting to see if other departments take that tack or if they don't. If they say, okay, no, if I'm the athletic director, I want to make these choices myself. I don't want to give too much power to this person. Obviously, in Stanford's case, the AD is leaving. So, I mean, I guess there's also a chance that Luck just becomes the AD. But you know, that whole thing, I think, is an interesting power dynamic as well.
Absolutely. Dustin DePerrick from the Indy Star. Make sure you're giving him a follow. Be a subscriber. Keep local papers alive. Grateful for you as always, my friend.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, Jim.
You betcha. Dustin DePerrick, as always, here on Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Hey, coming up next, Sherron Wilkerson, champion, state champion of the Jeffersonville Red Devils, joins us here from the Hard Truth Distilling Company Studios. We're back with more. Welcome back to the Hard Truth Distilling Company Studios on this Monday, and we should call it Championship Monday because if we wouldn't get a hit for it, I'd be playing We Are the Champions. But that's as best you get. But we've got the champion, Sherron Wilkerson, head coach of the Jeffersonville Red Devils. First of all, thank you for, on such short notice, making a point to be with us. But, brother, congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you, Jim. Thank you so much, my friend. Obviously, as always, man, thank you for having me on, Jim.
Thank you, man. It was such a great atmosphere, first of all. That entire day was great basketball. The crowds were great. The Jeff crowd, the Fishers crowd, man, it was loud. All of the coaches that was there, it was a spectacle. It was truly a great, great spectacle of Indiana high school basketball.
I mean, I think it was the epitome of what Indiana high school basketball is supposed to be, Jim. It's great basketball, all four games. And IHSAA did a really, really good job of making us feel at home and making the day very special.
And as good as Jeffersonville was going into that game, as good as you guys have been, you gave you guys a chance of beating Fishers, not so much because of Jeffersonville, but because of what Fishers had been had accomplished before that. They hadn't been beaten since the dawn of time, it seemed like, coming off of a state championship. They were loaded. They got Jason Gardner Jr., John Anthony. Dude, you know how I described him to somebody? You know those mannequins they use to show you the new sports uniforms?
Absolutely, yes, sir.
That's what he reminded me. I'm like, God, he looks like a mannequin, an athletic mannequin. That dude is he's going to Stanford to play football. But the most dominant player on the court was, without question, Trey Singleton. And not that Jeffersonville did it alone at all, but he was the most dominant player on the court that night.
Jim, I would tell you, I think that the state of Indiana got to see Trey Singleton in full display. High character young man, good in the classroom, terrific family. But he is he's a pro, in my humble opinion. And obviously, he's got to stay healthy. Got to make sure that he continues to mature in the areas that he's that he's deficient. But by all accounts, Jim, the kid is he's special.
Well, and there's a lot of specialness going on here, and I know you don't want to make it about yourself, and it's not, but you did something which afterwards you ended up being correct. The Star has you as being the second person to ever win a championship as a coach and a player. And then Greg Rakestraw kind of said, well, there's one caveat. Pete Turgovich, kind of a familiar name to people if you know anything about Indiana high school basketball, but he coached a consolidated school to a state title. But Pete Turgovich, by the way, beat Floyd Central at the Final Four back in 71. So it just all this stuff keeps coming full circle. But to be one of the absolute few people to do that, that has to be special for you, I know.
Divine intervention. It's divine timing. It is. Like you put that in perspective, Jim, and it's and I genuinely mean that, right? Like so many things, so many different people I have met through this journey, and I'm not for sure that I would have met them if this journey would have played out any other way. And Jim, and I will tell you that the people that I met on this journey were people that I had to meet in order to learn what I had to learn. It's the craziest thing, and there's no other way to describe it. It's divine intervention, and I just happen to be the vessel that is being used.
Well, it's more than refreshing just to hear someone see life in that direction. But, man, the fruits have been amazing. Mm-hmm. When Trey missed, Trey Singleton had a chance to win it in regulation after Jeff got the ball back. And when he missed that little six-footer in the lane, I was like, oh, man, oh, are you kidding me? But it was didn't matter. You guys were able to do what most people didn't think you could. And even I look forward to talking to Kyle Nettenrip, because he said after watching you guys in June, he was convinced that you guys would be a serious state contender and potentially the number one team, with Fishers losing Keenan Carter and Tandon Metzger, which also Jalen Harrelson a few years ago. But it didn't matter. They were just like this juggernaut. It was I don't want to compare them to Marion or something like that, because those guys were giants on their own, no pun intended. But they were a just – you couldn't beat them. They kept finding ways to win, and it looked like when Trey missed that final shot that they had that last gasp breath of air, but it just wasn't to be. Jeffersonville was destined to win this thing.
Well, I think you just hit the key word, destiny. And I've told everybody, you have to have some luck. I think you can control the controllables to get yourself there and give yourself an opportunity, but to get it done, to climb the peak of it, you have to have some luck. And we was very lucky last night. I think just remembering off the top of my head, the stat sheet, they had more offensive rebounds than we had total rebounds. And that's one of our point of emphasis, Jim, going into each game. We want to dominate the glass. And we was not able to do that. We was not able to do that in a championship game, and we were still able to come out on the winning end.
Yes, you were, and it was awesome to see. Now, what does this do? You've never won a state championship as a coach. Most guys haven't. Now, what does that do? What? How do you put that into perspective as you have guided these young men? What was the reception like? I was sitting there thinking, man, there's going to be thousands of people in Jeffersonville at 1 a.m. or whatever time you guys get home.
So we arrived at the gym right at about 2 a.m. And we got in here, Jim, and it was probably 1,000 people waiting for us. And it was words can't describe it. Like you have to be in that moment and feel that energy. You have to be in the moment and feel the environment, if you will. Like it's extremely powerful. And being able to experience it twice, like this is once in a lifetime. And to be able to experience it twice, obviously once as a player and now full circle as a coach, it's, man, it's God's will. It's no other explanation.
Tyrone wants to know, when's the parade down Spring Street, baby?
So right now my administration is in the middle of meeting and setting all these things up. It takes a lot. Obviously we've been dealing with a lot of things that come along with being successful at this level. And my administration, bless their hearts, they've been thrown in a whirlwind and they've done a really good job of responding. You know, this is something that don't happen every day, Jim. And this is something that most administrations typically don't have to juggle along with, you know, getting students to experience a normal school day. So it's been a lot to juggle, but they've done an absolute wonderful job. And we're in the middle right now of getting plans out, and we will be making a public statement and letting the community know what our plans are.
And now you go forward, there's going to be all these eyes that are always on Jeffersonville, which it's not like you guys were sneaking up on anybody to begin with, but you got the target even more so on your back going forward. You're one of them now, man. You're one of them.
We like being in this role, Jim. I think that it's a role that you embrace, right? It's not often that you get to be chased. You know, typically you are the one that's chasing. You are the chaser, if you will. So to be in this position, we're very humbled. I think that's important that people understand that. It's not an arrogant look at me, I told you so, definitely. But I will say this, Jim, it is an opportunity to purge the negative energy and the naysayers, right? Like you carry that around and it gets pretty heavy, you know, as you're going through the battle, as you're traveling that road. So to finally cross the finish line, to be able to relax and enjoy the fruits of your labor is priceless.
And I know that you're not thinking this consciously, but I also would be remiss to say that there's no way you're not aware of it. But, you know, all of the different coaches that are sitting there along the floor, whether it's Micah Shrewsbury from Notre Dame or Darren DeVries and assistants from Indiana or Chris Collins from Northwestern, AJ Moya, your friend from longtime assistant coach, all these guys that were there, that there's, I know that during the game you're not thinking of that, but you know that they're there.
Let me say this: it's an absolute honor just to even have those guys attend your game and give you their time. Obviously, time is the most precious resource we have. So for those guys to show up, I think speaks about the respect that they have. The other piece, it's a mutual admiration and mutual respect. I think for our guys being in this position, and that's the thing that hopefully our community and our family sees. You know, I had an opportunity to travel a very similar road that these coaches are on right now from a player perspective, even a tad bit from a coaching perspective. And I want our students and our student athletes and our community to use me right? I mean, man, let's use this opportunity to reach that next level. I mean, man, we have somebody in our community that has forged a relationship. So let's use that to our advantage. And then the third thing for me, it gives our gives the kids in our community an opportunity to pursue a higher level of education, Jim. And that is so important for me, you know, as their mentor and their coach. You know, obviously basketball is the tool that brings us together, but that basketball is going to stop dribbling at any time. So I think to be able to use that as a leveraging device to help solidify your life from an education standpoint is priceless.
Well, you are priceless, my friend, and so is winning a state title, because it's not coming down. It is on there, and I cannot tell you how happy I am for you. I love you as a person, and I'm so, so happy for all that you guys were able to accomplish, and now you get to try to do it again next year.
We will, man. We're going to enjoy this week, Jim. We're going to tie up the loose ends for a wonderful season, and then next Monday we get back to work, my friend. So we got work to do, but
right back at it.
Yes, sir. Yeah, we got work to do, my friend. Yeah.
How many? And this had to be great for some players that get eyes on them that may not have gotten that before.
Well, I think what you have seen is you've seen a trickle down effect. So, interesting story, Jim. Their freshman year, they get beat 30 in the sectional. The first year that I coach, the first game that I coach in their sophomore year, we lose 50. 3 years later, they win the state championship. So if you put it in that perspective, right, never mind the intricacies of the day-to-day grind, but just from a perspective of the beginning to the end, I think you can see the sacrifice and the hard work that they put in to get to this point. And that is the thing that I'm most proud of. You know, you have an opportunity, but do you take advantage of that opportunity? And I thought our guys maximized their opportunity.
You are very, very special, my friend, and we are grateful for you anytime you take the time to grace us with your appearance. Very, very happy for you.
Jim, thank you, my friend. It's always a pleasure, brother.
Thank you, brother. Sharon Wilkerson, the head coach of the state champion Jeffersonville Red Devils. Appreciate you, sir. Man, that was incredible to and appreciate Sharon taking time to get on here with very, very short notice. I'm sure he's worn out thousands and thousands of messages that he had to return after that. But very, very cool. Very great story to see that as well. Hey, man, I cannot thank each and every one of you guys enough. We're back tomorrow to do this again as the Chipotle Nationals get started this week. Plenty more to talk about. Until then, I'm Jim Coyle. I will see you on the radio.
Thanks for listening to Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Be sure to subscribe to our YouTube page for more clips and team coverage of Indiana basketball, football, and more. You can also find full episodes and tons of other content on thehoosier.com. We'll see you next time for another edition of Indiana Sports Beat Radio.
Hello, everyone. Jim Coyle from Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Thank you so much for listening to our content. We hope you enjoy it. Make sure you're a subscriber at either your favorite podcast download or on our YouTube channel at Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Either way, just give us a like on any of those. We would greatly appreciate it. It helps us immensely. Thank you and have a great day. Hello, everyone. Jim Coyle from Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Thank you so much for listening to our content. We hope you enjoy it. Make sure you're a subscriber at either your favorite podcast download or on our YouTube channel at Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Either way, just give us a like on any of those. We would greatly appreciate it. It helps us immensely. Thank you and have a great day.